I guess the key learning, I'm speaking to myself here, Jesse, is map out your year and reverse engineer what you need to do to be ready for those designated dates in the diary.
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Jesse Green here at the control panels, as always, and today it's an absolute pleasure to be having a conversation with Brad Beer. Brad began his career as an elite sportsman in his chosen field of triathlon, competing at the highest level. Now, not only did Brad compete at the highest level, he always was in the fortunate position of being able to observe other high-performance sports people, and he's been able to take all of those lessons into his new career as a physiotherapist, and as his business has grown and grown and grown, he's in the process of franchising Pogo Physio with tremendous success. So in this conversation, we cover a broad range of topics. We touch on the lessons he learned from his sporting career, overcoming resilience, how to deal with that catastrophic loss of a career and how he overcame that, and equally how to grow a business very, very rapidly, maintain a terrific culture around it, and remain focused on the future ahead. Brad has got a brilliant mind. He really is a man of discipline, of strength, and immense character. And what I really loved about this conversation with Brad is you see he's got such determination, such resolve to achieve his goals, something he's obviously learned from a young age and carried through his business career as well. In the conversation, he shares loads and loads of practical and useful tips to help grow your business as well as giving an insight into the mindset of an elite performer so that we can plumb into those insights and take them into our own life as well. So as always, have a pen and paper handy because Brad shares loads and loads of wisdom, loads and loads of tactics as well. And I know that if you can pick up what Brad's shared with us and run with it, you'll have a tremendous opportunity to succeed just as he has. So without any further ado, here's Brad Beer. Brad Beer, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Thanks so much for taking the time to come and hang with us. How's things in your neck of the woods?
Thanks, Jesse. My neck of the woods here on the sunny Gold Coast. We've got, I think it's about 23 degrees already this morning and not a cloud in the sky, and life is good.
Yeah, well, I think I was just mentioning to you off air that I just arrived back from the Gold Coast the other day, back to Canberra, and was greeted with 5 or 6 degrees. I'm feeling somewhat envious, as you say, that at the moment.
You have to get out of Egypt and come to the promised land.
I will have to do that, my friend. I will absolutely have to do that.
No, mate, I'm joking.
That's all good. Hey, listen, mate, I wanted to have a chat to you about quite a variety of things with you today because, we've known each other, for a couple of years now, but what I've observed about your journey over the last couple of years in terms of your business and whatnot is we were talking earlier that it looks like there's been, a lot of progress, and there has been, of course, there's been enormous progress, but it's been a bit of a journey, of course, in that as well. But what I wanted to really talk about just to start with is before we kind of get to your business journey, just a little bit about the Brad Beer story. How did you kind of get to be physio? I know you've got a background in sports and competition. Can you just fill us in on a little bit about that?
Yeah, Jesse, my interest in what's now my profession and been my career to date, physiotherapy, was really spawned out of my own triathlon endeavors as a kid growing up through the 90s. So I did triathlon as a junior, Jesse, for the better part of a decade. And, fortunately, some of my ambitions were met with a measure of some talent in the endurance sport world. So becoming a professional triathlete was my dream until a big bike crash in Sydney in 1999 and multiple nasty injuries, head injury, brain hemorrhage, broken bones, major things that, some of them didn't manifest till several years later when I was trying to get back in training and just literally unable to. So mate, that professional triathlon dream was sidelined, and the only other thing I'd thought of, Jesse, in those formative years as an adolescent was becoming a physio, purely for the reason that I spent most weeks at my physio's practice, and one day she said to me, Jesse, you would make a great physio one day. And so I think looking back, it's interesting, you gravitate often to that which you're encouraged towards, and outside of you know, my sport, that was the only thing that I had in mind. So it was only ever going to be professional triathlon or physiotherapist.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, that's an interesting one, because there's so much in that already that I'd really love to uncover, and we'll get to in a second. But, you know, dealing with that injury and the consequences of that, you know, a brain hemorrhage is obviously a considerably dangerous injury. What I wanted to ask you is, how did you cope with the thought that, you know, my professional triathlon career has been sidelined and now I'm going to sidestep into physio? What I guess what I'm trying to uncover and unpack is, how did you go through that process of realizing that that door has closed and I've got to step through another? What was that journey like?
Yeah, well, I guess the frank answer is, Jesse, I didn't cope through that process. You know, it was a horrible period of my life, you know, one that as a 19-year-old, I don't think I really had the know-hows to pull it off, but I thought, right, my life's not worth living if I'm not Brad Beer, the triathlete. You know, so thoughts of suicide that never went anywhere, but you're kind of like, what's the point? And, you know, the understanding, the learning that I took from that, Jesse, is which has carried me well into my professional career, is injury, lack of physical capacity is so much more than skin deep. It's the underlying emotions, the frustrations, the fears, the anxieties that are spawned off the back of being physically, you know, incapacitated. So I didn't cope, Jesse, and I looked through my early 20s and I was a shadow of the person I would normally be. So it served me well in terms of being able to empathize with people as they rehabilitate their injuries.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess, you know, coming back to the triathlon sphere for a second as well, because, you know, obviously you were competing at an elite level, you were surrounded by other elite competitors, and you know, that takes a certain, as you say, skill set, certain degree of talent. But I would imagine there's a certain mindset that would come with competing at that level, particularly in an endurance sport as well, which is, you know, pretty hardcore. What do you kind of see as some of the fundamental skills or attributes of high performers in that space that you think have held you in good stead through your professional career as a physio?
Yeah, it's a great question, Jesse. And I'm smiling here. Only reason being, it's only now in my mid-30s I've actually been able to put some of the pieces together. And I realize now, my wife, she's an integrative medical doctor, and she talks about this. People are prone to anxiety or they're prone to depression. You're on one of those sorts of scales. And I'm quite an active person. You know, I like to just stay on my feet and move. And so for me, I think the ingredients were for endurance sports and elite sports. I honestly think, Jesse, if you could personality profile most elite athletes, you're going to find type A's. You're going to probably find a lot of people with ADHD traits. You're going to find people that are prone to anxiety, that are, in my wife's medical world, undermethylators with their, you know, their biochemistry. It's these consistent traits. And I now see, Jesse, that if I don't get my exercise hit and my dopamine serotonin hit, I don't cope with the world as well as I do when I'm physically active. So I can honestly say, Jesse, looking at all my peers that I went through that sporting world with, most of them would fit that personality profile, that genetic wiring. But to more specifically answer your question, outside of that DNA level stuff, you've got, you know, obviously things like an innate discipline, you know, a love to challenge yourself, stepping into the discomfort, which carries through well professionally with, you know, everything like having conversations with team. And it's just that innate drive to better yourself. And you're really not competing against others. It's just that drive to make the best of what you've been given.
Yeah, I really love that. I was listening to a mentor of mine a little while ago, and he talks about mastery, personal mastery versus going out to beat someone. And it's exactly that concept. It's about, you know, trying to be the best version of yourself that you can be. And his definition of hell on earth is to meet the man he could have been, and which I really like that, because it, you know, challenges, you know, every single day just to try and be a little bit better than we were yesterday. Mate, I wanted to just understand a little bit the life of a triathlete as you're going into a race or a major meet. Obviously, you would have had some training. You would have, you know, I presume, had a training plan, a race plan, and, you know, a variety of bits of preparation around that. But can you just walk us through what that kind of looks like? You know, I guess what I'm trying to understand is planning to succeed and how you might put those pieces of the puzzle there, because I know for the audience listening, it's fascinating to hear about triathletes and sports, of course, and there's so many analogies and parallels between sports and business. So what I'm trying to understand is, what lessons could we take from, you know, planning for a triathlon as to preparing and planning for your business?
Good question. I think the key thing is, as you ask me that, Jesse, I think this is an interesting thought. you know, for racing, you plan out your season, you pick out your main races, you pick out the race that you want to be at your best for annually, and there's normally one, you know, a race, and then you've got these mini peaks along the way, and you reverse engineer every bit of preparation for each of those events. Yet in business, in the, you know, the tyranny of the urgent and the, you know, the losing of focus just with the amount of things that you get thrown daily, it's easy to lose sight of those annual peaks in activity, and just becomes one big menagerie of activity and a whirlwind. So I guess the key learning, I'm speaking to myself here, Jesse, is map out your year and reverse engineer what you need to do to be ready for those, you know, those designated dates in the diary.
Yeah. And what about the importance of recovery in that as well? Can, you know, again, from an athletics point of view, where does recovery fit into that? And is that applicable to business?
I think it's a very important aspect of both business life and obviously sporting endeavors. Probably the best insight I've had into recovery in recent years, Jesse, has been through one of the guests I've interviewed on the podcast that I host, which is about physical performance. And that was Nick Willis. And Nick's looking at going to his fifth Olympic Games representing New Zealand for 1,500 meters on the track. And
wow. And
Nick, Jesse, said this, and I think it's the most profound insight I've literally heard about rest. He said, "I get ahead when I rest." And I said, "What do you mean, Nick?" And he said, "Well, all my competitors are training. We're Olympians. We're all training hard. We're doing similar stuff. We're of similar ability when we get on that Olympic final start line." And Nick is an Olympic medalist twice over, silver and bronze medalist. And he's like, "So, but where I get my gains is when I'm resting, because a lot of my competitors aren't. They're caught in that activity trap." And I was like, "Wow, I've never heard it put like that. It's powerful, isn't it?"
It's really powerful, and I love that, because one of the things I find for anyone in business is we're paddling hard, yeah, and it's oftentimes they don't take time to kind of, you know, look up around and not just rest, but, you know, take stock of where they've come from, how far they've traveled, and you know, celebrate those little victories along the way. Because as you said, if you've planned the year out and you've had these little peaks along the way, you know, you've got to stop and acknowledge the wins or even learn from the challenges. But as you say, you know, taking that time to rest is really a good competitive advantage, and I really love that. And I guess from, you know, the business perspective, and I'm assuming it'd be similar in your physio practice, is taking some time away from hands-on clinical work to think and plan and strategize and not be go frantic the whole time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, healthcare workers, you know, small business owners in the allied health services, in the primary health services, I mean, I don't say this out of a position of, like, you know, anything other than knowing it, and that's, it's hard work. You know, you give of yourself, you deliver a service, but on top of that, you got the pressures of running a small business. And you know, that's, I just take my hat off to anyone that's in professional services in the health space that runs a business. It's incredibly challenging. And you either see the rare few thrive and flourish, or you see that typical 80% just going through the motions and the rigors of the work, the delivery of the services, the looking after patients and clients, you know, just gets people bit burnt out and stale, and, you know, and that's where they stay through to retirement. So, and then the few that, you know, see some sense and say, "This isn't for me," and go and reiterate into a different career. So, mate, it's challenging, and rest is just so, so important for allied health practitioners or health practitioners in general.
Mate, just while we're still, you know, speaking sport, because I do want to talk a little bit about scalability of businesses, because I know that's something that you've spent a lot of time studying and working on, and I do want to pick your brains about that, because it's a red hot topic in our world. But before we kind of leave the sporting things behind, we've spoken a little bit about dealing with disappointment and failure. We've obviously spoken a bit about, you know, rituals and rest and planning. What about, you know, you hear people talk about the fear of victory. If I win this sucker, what does that mean? Or if I achieve this particular goal, has that ever been anything that you've observed in any athletes around the place, where you kind of think they get so close and they almost seem afraid to kind of take that next step and really kind of win?
Yeah, I absolutely think it can be one of those things that holds some people back. It's that, you know, I can think of a current triathlete who's just broken through for their in the sport that I so closely still follow, for their first world championship race, if you like, win. And she's been second five times, Jesse. And, you know, this will now catapult her into a different mindset. And, you know, she hasn't got any physically fitter necessarily, but she's just, you know, gotten that debut victory. So as to the mechanics of, you know, that situation, other athletes, business owners, I do think often there is that fear of, you know, we've got the dream, we've got the vision, but counting the cost is the daunting thing. And there's always there's always some cost you got to pay. And it's not the commercial side. It's normally the pressures on the family. It's the pressures on your time. It's the pressures on your health. And I think when we look at where we want to go in off in business, it's that cost that we're subconsciously totaling up or tallying up. That's the bit that's like, okay, is the juice really worth the squeeze? You know, if we achieve this, is it really going to be worth that trade-off? And I know personally, Jesse, we've got a vision for Pogo and Pogo Partners, and you know, it's something that sits in my mind. Like, okay, we'll take this interstate. You know, do I really want to be away from my family for interstate travel? You know, you count those costs, but obviously, you know, people that achieve these goals, they've counted the cost, and if the cost wasn't worth it, then they obviously wouldn't keep going.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that's, again, it's kind of know thyself a little bit, isn't it? You know what you want to do, what you're willing to do, and then seeing if that fits in with what the price is to achieve that level of success, and then make your decisions accordingly. Mate, you've just mentioned Pogo Partners briefly, and I know that's something that I really want to explore with you, because scalability is something that, you know, in a health practice is usually that a lot of people struggle with. Typically, people will come to see a dentist, and I would assume a physio, because, you know, you're Brad Beer, and, you know, I want to see Brad, and that's really nice for one's self-esteem, but it also is a bit of a time trap as well. You've taken a really interesting approach to scaling, which is to start thinking a little bit about, you know, expanding interstate, you know, through a franchise type model. I'm wondering, can you just walk us through a little bit about that? How did that thought process come about? What were the challenges that you're looking to overcome with that model?
Yeah, Jesse, there's quite a genesis story of it. I've been a physio for 12 years, a business owner for 11.8 of those. And, you know, bar the first few months of my employment, which probably taught me a lot about the practice I didn't want to have in the future. But
welcome to the deep end, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Jess, you know, I guess the distinction about scale is, you know, and I heard this through Chick-fil-A's CEO, it's about getting better. It's not about getting bigger. And in my 20s, I spent time in, in an international group. I was the Queensland franchisor. This was from the age of about 26 through to 29, so about 30, 31. And I was running around wanting to set up this brand through our state that I live in here in Queensland, working, you know, hours that I've never even totaled, but they were just huge days, sacrificing a lot along the way. And if you ask me at my heart level at that point, Jesse, what my motive was, it was because I wanted to be known as doing this. It was about me. It was about my ego. And then we went through some really, so it was about getting bigger. It wasn't about getting better. It was just about getting bigger. And that led us through a horrible period of my professional life, you know, a 3.5 year legal extraction from that group, culminating in Supreme Court defense that I had to make in Brisbane earlier this year. And looking through the lens of, do I really want to do this? Is this really what I'm engineered for? Why would we push on with this? This is just, you know, horrible. You know, we just want to get free. You know, it was a real refiner of the motives. And that took me into my 30s. You know, I'm now 36, and you know, only this year we settled all that matter, and we've been free. But through the extraction process, it refined the real, I guess, the good old why behind the what. And for us, Jesse, Pogo Partners is about, it's been about getting better.
Yeah, I really love that philosophy, and I think, you know, we're singing from the same hymn sheet, Brad, because, you know, one of the things that we often talk about in our office is better before bigger. And it's really for us, and I know for a lot of the people listening, it's not necessarily about being the biggest. It's about just making sure, coming back to the point we made earlier, it's about personal mastery, being the best that we can be. And what I really love about your philosophy there is you've got this, you know, pretty cool and unique IP, and it's about doing things better rather than just, you know, scaling and getting bigger for the sake of it, which, you know, reflecting on that earlier journey you said, it was perhaps a little bit about ego. And I guess the question that needs to be asked for all of us in business is, what are we optimizing our business for? And I don't know, it's just a question worth pondering, I think. Do you sit and kind of think, what am I optimizing for? What do I really want here?
Yeah, absolutely. Most days, you know, it's like, okay, am I on track? And, you know, I saw what it took to run a national brand from the inside out, Jesse, in my years in the former group I was part of. And, you know, my experience and Pogo Partners' experience won't be the experience that I necessarily observed there. It'll be different, a bit like my first job. I learned a lot about how things would be done differently if I was to go down that journey. And in fact, franchising is a not something that excites me, but it's a inevitable legal requirement. As soon as you have one company using the IP of another company, it gets quite murky. And so, you know, we initially went about this thinking, right, we'll just license the stuff we've got. Another, you can be Jesse Green Physio and plug that into your practice, and your patients can get the benefit of the Finish Line programs and wellness boosters and all these things that we do. But unfortunately, that's, you know, not going to legally tick the right boxes. So we're looking at a franchise model, which, you know, I'm big on brand, I'm big on the customer experience. So we're very excited about that. Really, whatever it is, franchise or license, you know, is really just a bit of a documentation trail that sits behind what patients will experience.
Yeah, I love that, because again, it's really about knowing your outcome and then adjusting the tool to get to the outcome, really. And the outcome is to be able to, you know, share those, you know, wellness programs and, you know, Finish Line programs to a greater audience. And, you know, if that requires licensing or if it requires franchising, then, you know, whichever one of those is going to, you know, get the job done is how you go. And I guess it's that old story of, you know, fix the goal firmly, but be prepared to change course if you need to get there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when I first entered the industry, Jesse, I'd done 5 years at uni. Actually, it was six by the time I did my double degree. And I was always driven by wanting to make the experience of physio better. You know, even as a graduate, my first job, it wasn't what I thought it would be. And so I started a practice, and, you know, even dress codes, we dress better than most practices. We did marketing that was different to most practices, all because we thought this industry needs a shake up. And so, you know, when I did the really deep soul searching through our tough periods that I mentioned before, that purity of motive outside of the ego side of things that sat there in the 20s was very much that physio needs to be presented differently. People need to get a better experience. And we tracked key metrics, like how many people were getting remarkable results, Jesse, in physio through that period. And, you know, it was 34% at our practice, you know, that would actually get a Finish Line moment where you were told, Jesse, you've finished your course of treatment, you don't need to come back. I'm not talking about maintenance needs, I'm talking about acute rehabilitation. And we were operating with exceptional customer service, a great environment, great team, excellent clinical skills. So I looked at that extrapolated industry-wide, and I thought, well, gosh, I know how we operate with the standards in here. Our industry would most likely be giving a poorer experience. And so this isn't a very exciting proposition for our industry. And so we started to iterate, introduce these innovations we've done, and track that key metric, Finish Line results or complete and remarkable results. And we've seen that in a year, Jesse, in 2 year period, go from 34% to 69%.
Wow. So it's doubled.
Correct. Yeah. And that's been, you know, 1 year of implementing Finish Line programs and 1 year lead up introducing these concepts to teams. So it's been a 2 year project, but we're now at the stage where we've beta tested this model. We know it gives patients great value. They get 30% more value than what they pay for their fee. Our clients love it. Our treating practitioners love it. As a practice, we love it because we're not getting brand damage from people getting incomplete results as they engage us.
Yeah, yeah. Not only brand damage, but brain damage because of the frustration that comes with it. So, you know, that's great. So a couple of things just really quickly I want to pick up on, Brad, because you mentioned about purity of motive and wanting to do things better. So this is a constant theme for you, this wanting to do things better. How can I be better, do better, and so on. That seems like it's been a theme throughout your life. But I love the disruption part as well, because it's not disruption for disruption's sake. It's about looking at the status quo and going, is this really serving us? Can we do it better? And then, you know, setting about to find a solution to implement it. And that's the disruption moment, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, I get frustrated when I hear these marketing coaches say, what's your unique selling proposition? It's like, well, you know, it's kind of like saying, just try and be different to the guy or girl next door. And it's like, well, come on. Like, there's only so many little tweaks you can make to be different. And if you try and be different, well, that's going to get you so far. But if you genuinely, and we were speaking off air before we obviously went recording on this, Jesse, and you're like, well done, you're doing some good things. I'm like, yeah, it's been 12 years. It might look romantic from the outside, but trust me, it's been a grind getting there. And it's been that ruthless pursuit of doing it better that gives birth all of a sudden to these spontaneous moments where it's like, that's it. That's the breakthrough. But, you know, I see a lot of business owners in all sectors, they don't get those breakthroughs because they just don't persevere with it for long enough.
See, that's exactly what I love. I love the fact that you stayed in the pot long enough to cook, right? And so you've been pursuing things and grinding it out. And I'm sure, mate, there's been some tough days. I would imagine there's been some days where you kind of, you know, you look back and go, oh, let's not do that again. And that's the same in my experience for anyone in business. But you've got to remain engaged in that process to have the breakthroughs that you've had, because if you disengage, then the breakthroughs don't come and you've kind of, it's all been that slog for naught. So I really love the persistence and commitment to that pursuit of better, which is wonderful. Mate, I wanted to ask you really quickly a couple of key things. You've had the opportunity to observe lots of, you know, businesses. You know, we belong to some similar entrepreneurial groups and the like. But one of the things I wanted to ask you, just more broadly than just physio, but perhaps relating if it does, where do you see the common mistakes that some people make with a practice, you know, a professional services kind of business? Do you see any, you know, common themes? You go, oh, that's a bit of an oopsie. Any little mistakes that you'd see that, you know, others making, or that maybe you've made along the way? What would be some of those?
Oh, Jesse, where do we start, right? But I'll try and pick the key ones. But I can speak from my industry, and I know it can be extrapolated across multiple industries. For starters, as health practitioners, let's stop underservicing our clients.
Yes.
You know, if I've got a serious problem, I want to get the gold standard solution at least offered to me. If I then accept something that's less than that, that's on my back. I have chosen plan B or C. But in physiotherapy, Jesse, it is killing our industry. Physiotherapists judging the patient's hip pocket. You're not there to diagnose you the hip pocket. You're there to diagnose the injury and get them better. So, you know, a big thing around here internally at Pogo, Jesse, is hashtag family rex. Please treat Jesse Green as your own family member. What would you tell Jesse if he was your father or your brother or your uncle? That's what every patient needs to hear out of your mouth. And what they then choose is their prerogative. Now, the interesting thing about that, Jesse, is underservicing. It's spawned by the limitations of session-to-session care. Session-to-session care is expensive. People don't prioritize it because there's not a guaranteed sort of a rock as an outcome. So that's one thing. Secondly, I'd say let's stop doing short consultations, healthcare providers, initially. You know, if people want express medicine, they can go and choose it and they know what they're signing up for. But we've shifted. That was one of the biggest shifts we made, Jesse, in our practice, was shifting from 45-minute initials, to which were already on the longer side of our industry norms, to a 60-minute initial consultation. Just that tweak alone, Jesse, took that outcome percentage from 34% remarkable results to 52% in 6 months.
Wow.
Sitting with patients for 15 minutes longer, truly understanding their story, truly understanding what it is that they're trying to get done, which would be the third thing. Healthcare practitioners, business owners, understand the problem that the patient or the client that sits before you is trying to solve, and don't understand it at that superficial level. Yeah, they're trying to get out of pain. They want their teeth whiter or straighter or whatever it is. Why? And plumb down two levels. We train our team around that. Ask that question. Why is that important to you twice? And then that's when you tend to get to that real heart driver. And I think of a story, Jesse, in my professional life where I had a lady in with a knee injury. Obviously, she's here to help the knee get, you know, better. And why do you want to do that, you know, Mrs. Patient? Well, I want to be able to run and do my PT. I could have left it there, Jesse, but obviously I've been in the industry long enough to know that's not the true reason. Tell me, Mrs. Patient, why is it important to you to get back to your PT and running? Well, let me tell you, Brad, we lost our daughter after a 3-year battle at 13 years of age with cancer. And through that 2 years, I didn't exercise once. You know, my world was in pieces, and now I've got that ability to start to try and, you know, to try and get back some of my physical capacity and, you know, get some things moving forwards in my life. Do you think that's a different rehabilitation journey as a result of me taking time to ask that question?
That's a massive difference, mate. And, you know, oh my goodness, that is so incredibly powerful when you tap down to that emotional reason, because you're right. It's a very different process, very different outcome, very different focus. And yeah, I'm just thinking of that poor lady and her daughter. That must have been incredibly difficult. But I'm sure now, you know, her knee is, you know, better, and she's hopefully getting the physical activity. But look, I agree with you wholeheartedly, mate, because coming back to it, people come to us. I mean, no one ever walks into a dental practice and says, hey, Jesse, I'm so excited to be here for my filling. Like said no one ever, right? And so again, it's about understanding why people are coming. You're right. What problem are they trying to solve at a very deep and emotional level? And I think really our job then is to match our treatment plan to, of course, meet the treatment requirements, but also to meet that emotional need as well. That's really the key.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think of it in internal problems and external problems. External problems, obviously, the teeth need to be whitened, they need to be straightened, the filling needs to be put in. And the internal problems is because, you know, they've got their ball coming up and they want to look their best, and that's important to them because they've had, you know, it's endless, but it's just so important. And it's the difference, Jesse, between being transacted and transformed.
Yes, completely. The transactional healthcare model is one that just kills me. And it's also, I think, I think it's very detrimental to patient care because I really feel like, again, we get dipping into that space where we're not treating our patients, you know, comprehensively. We're not giving them the what would I do for my parents or family member standard. But the other thing too is it kills your business. It's not good for the patient, but it's also not good for the practice, because as soon as you slip into transactional mode, you're commoditized. And then, you know, my practice looks the same as the next practice, which is the same as the next. And that's just a really miserable kind of place to be business-wise.
Yeah, it's a commodity. And everyone, how often do you hear this in our sectors, Jesse? Oh, we really care. We care more than the next guy or the next girl. It's like, well, actually, I challenge you, dear practitioner, dear business owner, if you really cared, you would actually start to look at family recommendations. You know, you'd look at the environment you're creating, you'd look at having systems in place that ensured your clients got their result and didn't drop out. And so, you know, that's a frustrating line I hear is, oh, we really care. Well, we all care in healthcare. That's why we went into it. We genuinely all care and nurturers, and we really do care. You know, do we care enough to take the, you know, to stay in the game long enough to continue to be passionate enough to, you know, to make changes that actually get patients better results.
I really love the fact that, you know, your whole model is really, how can we do this better? What improvements can we make for our patients? And that's been through that evolutionary process. That's where you've, you know, created, and I don't want to use the overword disruption, but it is disruption, but it's not disruption for disruption's sake. It's how can we do this better? And I love that little catch cry is, you know, what can we do to be better? Mate, just as we wrap up, I would like to just ask you a fairly broad question, because this is just something that I'm always interested and curious to understand about, you know, people who may have influenced you in your journey along the way. And typically I'll frame this question, you know, if you could invite, you know, half a dozen or so people over for a dinner party and put them down and break bread together, you know, they could be living or otherwise. Who would be the people that you'd say have influenced you that you'd love to put around a dinner table and have a conversation with?
And so we've got half a dozen seats to fill. Is that right, Jesse?
Well, you don't have to fill half a dozen. You know, as many or as few as you like.
Oh, gosh, Jesse. I mean, I guess, you know, I read this book years ago, and it was called Order Your Private World. And it's by a gentleman called Gordon MacDonald. And he really talks about cultivating the inner victory to be outwardly effective, right? And so I'd have Gordon MacDonald at my dinner table. I have a deep faith, Jesse, and that's been born out of, you know, lots of challenges over the years, mainly that challenge we touched on about the junior triathlon years where I was soul searching about who am I and why I'm on this planet. I'd invite, and I had a guest on my show ask the same question of him, and he's an Olympic triathlete, and he invited Jesus to his table. So I'm inviting Jesus, Jesse.
Okay.
So I've got Gordon MacDonald and Jesus. That'd be an interesting conversation.
That would be.
Then, mate, in the business sector, you know, you can't go past, and I know you've had the distinct privilege of recently catching up with him, Richard Branson. So let's put Richard there. We've got three other seats to fill, don't we? Let's keep going. This is fun. I'd put Kelly Slater there.
Oh, nice.
We talk about performance, and, you know, I mean, the guy's won more world titles in any sport than any athlete in history, and I am amazed at those performers that keep performing and what drives them and what, you know, the mechanics are behind that. So let's put Kelly Slater there. Mate, let's bring my wife along, because she'd enjoy meeting some of these people. And
yeah, and you'd be dead if you didn't bring her along as well.
She's a good conversationalist. That last seat, I think we should leave a mystery or let you have the honour of filling that last seat. Jesse, who do you want to put there? Do you want to come along yourself?
Well, I would love to be there, but in terms of finding another guest that would, I think, be interesting, look, there's so many different people that you could have there, of course. I think one of the people that I would, you know, it's probably a cliche, but I'd probably like to have Steve Jobs there. And if not Steve Jobs, I would really like to have Graham Henry, former All Blacks coach. Because in terms of, again, successful sporting teams and culture and performance and all that sort of stuff, for me, the All Blacks, as much as I hate to admit this being an Aussie, they are just an absolute champion team. And they've had obviously a lot of success. So I think that would be an interesting conversation as well.
That would be, mate. And right, there's going to be a bit of a dynamic around that table. Where are we having this, Jesse?
Yeah, your place, mate. I'll be there tonight.
Yeah. Beautiful.
All right. Hey, listen, mate, I really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to come and hang with us on the Savvy Dentist podcast, mate. And, you know, it's no wonder that you're doing such wonderful things for your profession. Yeah, your commitment to excellence, your commitment to being better, you know, today than you were yesterday, I think is, you know, really something that all of us can aspire to, that relentless pursuit of excellence. And congratulations to you, mate. As you said, it's been a 12-year journey, and I know that you've achieved some extraordinary things, mate. I'm looking forward to hearing and seeing what you achieve over the next 12 years, mate, because I know it's going to be stratospheric, these results. So well done to you, my friend.
Oh, thanks, Jesse. And shout out to your listeners, mate. Obviously, the people tuning into your program are, you know, the extra milers in the industry. So well done to everyone that's tuning in. And yourself, mate, putting content out like this, I know what it takes. So well done for continuing to show up, mate.
Thanks, mate. I appreciate that. Listen, mate, next time I'm up at the Goldie, let's catch up for coffee and see who else we can gather up and have a bit of a chat.
Sounds good. Thank you, Jesse.
Cheers. Bye, Brad.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.